Can we make clarity out of the chaos? Well, we're not sure, but we're going to make a good try of it. Find out if we can do it next on Principles and Policies. Hello, this is Chuck Michaelis. I'm your host here on Principles and Policies. What am I talking about? Well, folks, if you don't know the chaos that's going on, then you need to get out more. I'm sure all of you can have an idea of what's going on. We've had a number of very important things happen, and of course, last week I was unable to make a recording to talk about some of these things. And so we're going to talk about some of them as much as I can get in my little one-hour slot that we didn't get to last week. Now, there's a good reason. I have an excuse. My mom wrote me a note. I'm just kidding. My mom died a couple of years ago. I do have an excuse. My oldest daughter, at 36 and a half weeks pregnant, got very toxic. Had to go in the hospital twice, and they gave her fluid and sent her back home and blah, blah, blah. Well, on Tuesday, she had to go in. They did a quick exam of her in labor and delivery and said, okay, you're getting an emergency C-section because she was so toxic and the baby had stopped moving. My grandchild had stopped moving. And they did an emergency C-section on her on Tuesday. Well, she came through just fine, but my new grandson, 7 pounds, 3 ounces, he got his, we're going to write him a little book called My First Helicopter Ride, because he was born in Licking Memorial Hospital, and he got a little ride over to Children's Hospital on the Children's Hospital helicopter. And it was very... I was there when the pilots and the crew, the medical crew came in, and it turned out that the pilot was what we call a coastie. My son-in-law is a coastie. He's in the Coast Guard, and he is stationed in Mobile, Alabama, and he works on helicopters. That's what he does. He's an avionics specialist who works on helicopters. So we talked to the pilot a lot about that. They had trained in some of the same places and been stationed in some of the same places. But that being said, my little grandson got his first helicopter ride. And all very harrowing experience for mom, who handled it very well. Dad handled it very well. Grandparents handled it very well. My little grandson has been in the NICU, the neonatal intensive care unit, since today's the 26th. I'm recording for the show on the 27th. My grandson's been in there since, Tuesday the 16th. So what is that? 10 days. I should have known that. 16th through the 26th. He gets out today, the 26th. And by the time you hear the show, he will have been out for a day. God willing, he's a fighter, just like his grandpa, just like his old man, and just like his mom. He's feisty, and has his own way of doing things. We've been laughing about their little personalities come out. You know, he knows what he likes and he knows what he doesn't like, and he'll let you know when he doesn't like it, like most babies. But he's been very he has progressed very rapidly. In fact, I saw him. Oh gosh, what's the earliest? I may have seen him on Tuesday or Wednesday. Last week, and I could already tell the boy was fine. That what they were worried about was because he'd been so toxic, and they thought his Apgar scores were terrible, and they thought they detected a tremor, which means they thought he might have a seizure. I don't think he had a seizure. Nonetheless, they did what they do. They took him over and put him on all the monitors, and they have this technique that they use over there where they put you on a cooling blanket. Well, he was on a cooling blanket for like 3 or 4 days where they lower his body temperature down to, well, it was 33.5 centigrade, which is around 94, 95 degrees Fahrenheit. And they keep you cold to prevent brain swelling in case that's being caused by the toxicity issue and that kind of thing. So they kept him cold for 3 or 4 days on this cooling blanket while he had all the monitors in, you know, the usual stuff, blood pressure and the respirations and his blood sugar and all that stuff. But they were also measuring his brain waves, which I watched for a while. It's boring. I mean, there sit there peaks and valleys on the brain waves. But he had all the little things attached to his head. He has a lot of hair. And unlike his grandpa, he has a lot of hair. And he had, you know, those stickers all stuck to it, which he didn't care for. And he didn't like the oxygen they had him on. He kept tearing that out. But nonetheless, they put it back in. And he's in any case, he gets out today. They're going to spend some time with us here at our house because we're a one-floor plan. They have a two-story. My daughter and son-in-law have a two-story, and Mama's still having a little trouble walking up steps. She's doing much better on that. But this is nothing new for us. My middle daughter has had 3 C-sections, and she's come to stay with us all 3 times because they live on a second-floor walk-up apartment. And it's just easier for Mama. We have one step to get down to the driveway level, so that's not a big deal. So nothing new to us. We've had C-section babies before. The first one because of preeclampsia. Well, Liz, my oldest daughter, did not have preeclampsia, and she did not have the flu. She was tested for that, both those things, to make sure that that's not what was happening. And it turns out that what she had was a urinary tract infection. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you have pregnancies in your, and this is not the first time I've heard of this, UTIs causing early births. I had a friend I work with, going on 30 years ago, who got a UTI and had go way early, like 28 or 29 weeks. My daughter was at full term. She was 36 and a half weeks. These babies were at 28 or 29 weeks, and they were in the intensive care unit for a good long time. So make sure that if there are any symptoms in pregnant ladies that you know of urinary tract infections, get it handled because it can't lead to bad things. Okay, enough of my doctor's medical advice. Now you understand why I didn't record a show last week. I was a little busy shuttling back and forth between 2 hospitals that were 35 miles apart. That was unpleasant. Nonetheless, we were happy with the result. Healthy mama and a healthy baby. So we'll give thanks to God for his providence and for his protection and for that we live in a time. I love being in the modern world. There are things I don't like about it, but you know what? You got to take the good with the bad. We live in a time when babies who used to die survive. And just an editorial comment, it's amazing to me that we still live in an age where people in Ohio and people in other places voted to allow abortion right up to the point of birth and put it in the Constitution. Whether you knew you were doing that or not when you voted for it, it's your responsibility because it was your responsibility to find out that's what it did if you voted for it. If you voted against it, thank you. And if you feel strongly about it, then you should get out there and start a campaign or get involved in a campaign to rescind that particular, to change the Constitution once again, to remove that. It was a mistake to put that in the Constitution, and it was done by propagandistic means. Folks, get yourself educated on how to counter propaganda. If you want to know how to do that, I don't know. Maybe we'll do a couple shows on that. I have done some things on that, and you need to learn how to counter the propaganda and how to see through it. A lot of people did not and are now saying, but well, I didn't vote for that. Well, you did if you voted for it. If you didn't, again, I'm assuming most people in this audience voted against that constitutional amendment in November, and I give thanks for it. In any case, yes, we would like to save as many babies as possible. A friend of mine, someone who I'm acquainted with, we're not close friends, is getting ready to go on trial in Tennessee. He's from Michigan. There are six people who are preparing to go to a trial in Michigan, a federal trial for violating an abortion rights a law, quote unquote law, a law which essentially disallows people from protesting in front of an abortion clinic. Really isn't a law, but nonetheless, which is the premise that they went and protested in front of an abortion clinic. So his name's Cal Zastro, but there are five others. And there's one person who, frankly, chickened out, took a guilty plea, and is turning state's evidence against the other six. And shame on that person. Sorry if you don't feel that way, but shame on that person. It's a betrayal. And hopefully they can redeem themselves on the witness stand, but that remains to be seen. We've had a number of other things go on since last Tuesday, the 16th. Well, for instance, Tuesday the 16th was what? It was, I believe it was the Iowa caucuses. Or maybe that was the 15th. It doesn't matter which day it was. It was last week. The Iowa caucuses, which Donald Trump won on the Republican side, won handily. And, of course, Joe Biden won handily on the Democratic side. Unknown to a lot of people, he did not get 100% of the votes. Now, Donald Trump ended up winning New Hampshire, I think, by 55. 55 against four other, the other three split the 45 between them, with Ron DeSantis coming in second, Nikki Haley third, and Vivek Ramaswamy, and there was another one, I think, all of whom essentially pulled out except for Nikki Haley. And Nikki Haley is basically staying in the race by virtue of the fact that she's got a money pump coming in from the Chamber of Commerce types, although one of her big money people just pulled out. And the other big money people are getting ready to pull out because it's good money after bad. Nikki Haley claims she's going to stay in for the duration of the campaign. I doubt it. Nevada is upcoming, and despite the fact that it's a small number of delegates, it's going to tell the tale of the tape. You know, people like Mitt Romney and Mitch McConnell and all these guys are essentially pearl-clutching about, oh, the horrors of having Donald Trump be the nominee. As Donald Trump is continuing to progress toward the nomination, you've got people like this case down in Georgia that is rapidly falling apart because of the intense and concentrated corruption of the prosecutor. You know, hiring her lover to be part of the special prosecution team and them traveling together, and he's married. Okay, well, that happens all the time. But the fact is that he's being paid gigantic amounts of state money to be involved in this special prosecution for what amounts to a non-crime. He questioned the outcome of the outcome of the election. And he claimed, and it seems rightfully so, considering what is coming to light in closer examinations of the voting patterns and the shenanigans that went on with counting the vote. It seems that Trump may have been right. Now, there have been other convictions already. Trump's attorney was convicted in this thing. Basically, I have seen these federal prosecutions, and here's what they do. They basically limit you on what you can use for your defense. The judge comes out and says, oh, you can't use this defense, you can't use that defense, you can't use this evidence, you can't use that evidence. Well, this is our exculpatory evidence. Can't use it. Well, you get backed into a corner, you have all your exculpatory evidence removed, You can't use certain forms of defense, and what choice do you have but to plead guilty and take a reduced charge? And that's exactly what's happening in these cases. So when you hear that so-and-so who's involved in the campaign, some of his campaign people, some of his campaign managers, his attorney, have all pleaded guilty to these crimes, they had no choice. They had no choice but to plead guilty. Now, let's see what happens on appeal. When they go into an appeal process and the courts look at it and say, you cannot take away these people's right to defend themselves. Now, this is at the state level. At the federal level, this happens all the time. If they want you, they will get you, because what they do is they come in and do what they call an in limine, and they limit your defenses that are available to you. That was never the idea behind the courts, and it's done, unfortunately, it's done using the mechanisms they created for the war on drugs. They're using the war on drugs to get you for all kinds of weird things, environmental crimes, quote unquote, crimes where you're using your property in a way that's not approved by the federal government, all kind of gun things, ways you, businesses you run, farming, the way you run your farm, those kinds of things. The federal government just comes in, uses the defense limitations that are available to them under these drug laws, and voila, they get umpteen. This is why federal prosecutors have 90%+ conviction rates, because they make it impossible for the defendants to defend themselves. So don't be impressed when you hear, I've got a 97% conviction rate. Yeah, you do. Because why? Because you railroaded the people that you were prosecuting. Now, are some of these legitimate? Oh, sure. People that are dumping chemicals into their land and that kind of thing. You can't do that. And those are legitimate. Should they still be allowed to defend themselves? Of course they should. What defense they would muster remains a mystery. But that's the whole point of having a trial, where you argue these things and you argue the pieces of evidence. This is being done in a way that is, well, I'll be quite honest. If you're not frightened by it, by what I've described to you, then I feel sorry for you. But we have these things going on. And this was supposed to destroy Donald Trump's career. Republicans were supposed to look at this and go, oh my gosh, Donald Trump. Oh, look, he's a criminal. All the people around him are convicted. Oh, this is horrible. No, what they did was, they created their own monster. They created Frankenstein. Like Donald Trump or hate him, the fact is that the news media, coupled with these government prosecutions, this, like especially the one in New York, where he's being tried for two things. One, he's being tried for supposedly lying and overvaluing his properties to get loans, which the people that from the banks who were supposedly defrauded by these overvaluations said, no, he didn't overvalue the property. We thought the properties were worth that. And C, he's paid all the loans back. Well, how can you defraud someone if they thought the property was worth what you claimed it was worth, that you took a loan against, and you paid all the loans back? Well, this is an attempt, again, to besmirch the name of Donald Trump and claim he was a fraudster. The second one is a civil damage suit with a woman who claims that he sexually assaulted her in a department store. And Trump has maintained all along that not only did I not sexually assault her, I don't know who this woman is. We've never met. And the woman has all kinds of major issues. The judge will not let Trump testify to some things. Again, this is that in limine. He's limited his defenses. And Trump says, I have never met this woman. I don't know who she is. There was a criminal trial, as I recall, and he was found not guilty because she couldn't prove that this happened. There was no evidence. She couldn't remember exactly when it was, what day of the week, what day of the month, what year. She couldn't remember any of that. She couldn't remember what she was wearing. She could, all these things. She probably, I don't know for sure, but she probably made this all up. Again, folks, looking at it from a biblical perspective, do I think that Donald Trump is as innocent as a lamb and pure as the driven snow? No, I don't. He's had multiple affairs. Has he done shady business stuff? I don't know that firsthand, probably at some point. And I mean, he is a real estate mogul in New York. There is no way that you can survive in the New York real estate market as a big player without probably paying a bribe, without hobnobbing with people who you'd rather not hobnob with. I've seen a couple of memes around that they're trying to make Donald Trump a friend of Jeffrey Epstein. And there's a couple of films of them at some public gathering where they're talking and chatting and doing this. See, they're friends. Well, except that Donald Trump threw him out of and banned him from Mar-a-Lago and dropped him as any sort of acquaintance when it became clear that he was engaged in illicit activity. This is long before he was caught. This is years before he was caught. Donald Trump saw the signs and said, I don't want anything to do with this guy. So that's a story there. These are attempts to besmirch his character falsely. The true stuff, look, it's out there. We all know that he was married to Ivana's the mother. Ivanka's the daughter. Ivana, Marla Maples, and now his current wife, whose mother just passed away. And I'm having name issues. But nonetheless, he claims that he has seen the error of his ways and parted with them, and that's fine. Okay. Now, the Iowa caucuses. This was all supposed to be destroyed. Everything was supposed to be destroyed by these prosecutions. Did it work? No, it had the opposite effect. In fact, DeSantis and Trump were running neck and neck until everybody thought that this was going to be the gotcha, and they published his mugshot. His mugshot was widely published in the media. And what did that do? It made people angry, as it should have. He's being persecuted. He's not being prosecuted. He's being persecuted. And so far, these prosecutions are persecutions. Especially the Georgia case, especially the two New York cases. And since then, the people trying to remove him from the ballot, people who purport themselves to be historians and say, well, in the South during the Civil War, right before the Civil War, Abraham Lincoln was removed from the ballot in the South. He didn't appear on the ballot because he was removed from there by Southern states who didn't allow him to appear. That's false. The Southern states where he did not appear on the, where Abraham Lincoln did not appear on the ballot, were removed from that ballot by the Republican Party. In those days, the parties had more control over the ballots than they do now. The states came in and took control of those in the 1880s or so. The parties had control of the ballots, and the Republicans just said, we're not going to waste our time in the Deep South because he's not going to get any votes, and he's not certainly not going to get any electoral votes, and he's not going to get very many popular votes. So they didn't bother. They withdrew his name from those ballots. No, it wasn't the South that kept him out. And that's what they were arguing, you know, all this horrible thing in Colorado. Should Colorado and other states, Maine tried it. Colorado's the only one whose Supreme Court came out and voted and said, yeah, you can take him off the primary ballot. And the reason that they're using is supposedly his insurrection, quote unquote insurrection. Well, we've talked about that in previous shows. Why, when an insurrection isn't an insurrection, and January 6th was it. Was it a riot? Yes. Should those people be tried as rioters, and civil disobedience who did things they shouldn't have done? Yes, they should be. Are they insurrectionists? The answer is no, they're not. An insurrection is an armed revolt in a capital city with the purpose of taking control of the central government, and not just the capital city, but in strategic cities. That's not what happened here. They were protesting they wanted Mike Pence and company, who showed he had a clear non-understanding of what was happening. They wanted them to send disputed states back to their to be recounted properly, remove fraudulent votes that were cast in places like Pennsylvania, Michigan, Arizona, Georgia, several other states. They wanted those recounted and investigations done into how the vote was actually done. And what did they do? They went ahead. Pence pointed to the Constitution and said, well, no, we have to certify today. No, you don't. And in fact, we have precedents in the past. We have another stolen election, which a lot of people don't know about. It was the election of 1876, and it was called the stolen election. It was William Henry Harrison versus Samuel J. Tilden, if I recall correctly. And if you've never heard of Samuel J. Tilden, it's because he, despite the fact that he legally won the presidency, he did not get to be president of the United States. So therefore, you've never heard of him. Samuel J. Tilden was the governor of New York and ran for president. I stated William Henry Harrison. Of course, William Henry Harrison is who died in office after a month. And in 1841, my misspeak, it was Rutherford B. Hayes, and Rutherford B. Hayes is an Ohio boy. He's one of our Ohio presidents, and Hayes is, I think, was fully aware that, frankly, he was not the elected president of the United States, because he was not. The way it worked was, there were four states where two slates of electors got together and voted, and both submitted those to Congress. So what happened was there were four states that had two sets of electoral votes submitted to Congress. Well, this was a complete mess. A complete mess. And rather than sending it back to the states, I think they tried to do that. The Senate formed a quote unquote commission. This is always a mistake. A blue ribbon panel, folks. If you hear that a blue ribbon panel is being formed, run screaming from the area. So they formed this blue ribbon panel. And they came up with this compromise. And basically, Rutherford B. Hayes won the presidency by one electoral vote. By one. There was corruption, there was greed, there was violence. Folks, it really was much worse. It may have been the same thing had the results been sent back to the states for proper certification. The result may have been the same, but the result may have been very different, because there was already opposition in places like in Pennsylvania, in Arizona. Remember that in Arizona, the woman who was running for governor and won fraudulently, in my opinion, was also the Secretary of State, who did not recuse herself from the recounts in the presidential or the gubernatorial election down there. She oversaw her own election and electoral votes for Joe Biden out of Arizona. And so much fraud was very obvious and evident in Maricopa County, where the election was stolen. We've talked about this before. You don't have to steal an entire state's electoral system to get all the electoral votes because of the winner-take-all system. And I've suggested many times that needs to come to an end. We need to go to the Nebraska and Maine system, which is awarding by the vote in individual congressional districts. But that being said, the governor down there oversaw her own election to the governorship and for her own party's nominee for president. And by the way, the Republicans really didn't do much. A lot of them knew there was fraud, but the news media came out and immediately called anyone who protested, who said there were problems with this election, they called them election deniers. In the same way we were called science deniers, those of us who refused to take the vaccine and the quote-unquote vaccine. It's not a vaccine. It was genetic therapy. But that being said, they were called election deniers. And shut up that way. Republicans are still too fearful of a news media, which essentially has been emasculated. They have nothing. And we have Donald Trump to thank for that. We also have Ronald Reagan. He started the ball rolling. But Donald Trump just basically said, hey, you're fake news. You're not involved here. And it caused places like CNN to go completely off the deep end. You already had some that were already off the deep end. MSNBC, CNBC, CNN, they were all deep state propaganda. Russia, Russia, Russia. Or if you'll recall that, CNN essentially destroyed itself on the rocks of the Trump-Russia collusion, which turned out to be completely fake. It was run by the FBI and the CIA and other intelligence, NSA, security agency. These guys were pushing this dossier that turned out to be a complete fake fabrication, found so eventually, and the FBI has since admitted, yeah, we knew it was fake. We knew it was fake all along. While they were attempting to, they're very open about the fact that they just wanted Donald Trump gone as president. And CNN, if you'll recall, about twice a week, for years, they would come out, we've got the smoking gun now. They always had the smoking gun. And MSNBC, we've got that smoking gun. And the smoking gun would turn out to be, you know, it was one of the old prop guns, you know, the joke things where you'd pull the trigger and a big flag would come out that said bang. It was nothing. Why? Because it was fake. And it was easily seen to be fake. Meanwhile, the current president of the United States was surreptitiously taking bribes from the Ukrainian, Chinese, and Russian governments through the front man of his son, Hunter Biden. That's becoming an exposed fact. What is Congress doing about it? Nothing. Why? Because, well, Joe Biden's not going to make it. Now, I'll be quite honest. I don't think he'll be the nominee, despite his showing at New Hampshire. I think he got 84% of the voter. But that means somebody else, some other candidates got 16%. Now, who is Nikki Haley? Go back to the Iowa caucuses. Now, Ron DeSantis did not have this problem. Ron DeSantis is what was drawing from a sincere and legitimate voter pool that thought he would be a better president than Donald Trump. And I get that. I understand. They'd seen his performance in Florida. I personally could not support Ron DeSantis just because I'm well aware that he plays ball with rhinos. He's willing to compromise with rhinos to get things done. No, the rhinos have been getting us, the Republican base, they're conservatives, and I'll count myself in that picture. They've been forcing us to compromise, despite our better judgment, through our representatives who say, we can't win, we can't win, we can't win. Yes, we can. And Donald Trump shows, the victory of Donald Trump shows that we can win. And you'll notice that Mitch McConnell was all gung-ho, let's get this compromise deal through on immigration, which essentially would have opened the doors to people coming in from Mexico, Canada, however they're getting here, would have just simply opened the borders. And all of a sudden, Mitch is like, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute, because they all see their neck in the noose electorally, metaphorically, not for real. They all see their political careers getting ready to get chopped up, and they don't want to be part of that because they know it looks like Donald Trump's going to be the nominee, and this is going to be a hard-fought campaign. Who are they going to get to take Biden's place? Well, it won't be Kamala Harris. She's extremely unpopular. They know that she can't win. She's got such a horrible reputation among Democrats that they're not interested. She won't be it. Who are they talking to? They're talking to Gavin Newsom, who's the governor of California. And if you recall, there was a quote-unquote debate between Gavin Newsom and Ron DeSantis down in Florida. And Gavin Newsom did not acquit himself well. Gavin Newsom thought he was going to go to Florida and show people why it was a bad idea to move away from California, why you should move your businesses back to California. It's absurd, folks. If you're paying any attention at all in California, it's a mess. I used to go there regularly for business. I've stopped going there for a number of reasons. I've been reluctant to go back. There are places I used to love to go to. You know, I couldn't stand to be there for more than about 10 days, but nonetheless, the atmosphere and the beauty of the state itself lent itself to being visited. But the fact is that I wouldn't go back now, and it's a bad place. The laws are terrible. You can't run a business. I have a business associate there who I used to go call on regularly, one of my suppliers, and she's closing her business. I just got something from her. My last shipment from her is basically on its way to me right now. She's closing her business. She's trying to sell it. Nobody wants to buy it. Why? Because it's in California. I'm like, buy it and move it. Move it to Arizona, where the business conditions are much friendlier. It'll be Gavin Newsom, or this is the one that really, Michelle Obama. Well, if you want to polarize, yeah, put Michelle Obama in there. You thought you were polarized before there, but they know that there are people at the state levels who will do anything to steal an election to get Michelle Obama in. And again, as we've said before, you don't have to steal a whole state. You have to steal the population centers. Yeah. You in Arizona, you steal Maricopa County. In Georgia, you steal Atlanta and surroundings. Really not that hard. You stuff ballot boxes, you allow essentially fake voting through mail-in ballots on the basis of a pandemic, quote-unquote, a deadly pandemic in which there's a 99.8 survivability rate. In other words, 0.02% of people who got COVID died from it. Everybody else came through just fine. Okay, that being said, the names I'm hearing bandied about to take Biden's place are Gavin Newsom and Michelle Obama. Despite Gavin Newsom doing so poorly in that debate with Ron DeSantis, who basically knew, was probably well aware he was not going to be the presidential nominee. In any case, since then we've had the New Hampshire primary, in which Trump again won handily. And it caused most everybody else to drop out except Nikki. And we're finding out that the news media tried to make a big deal about this little town called Dixville Notch that always votes before everybody else in New Hampshire. They vote just after midnight or right around, it's late night on the evening before the regular primary. And they made a big deal because they all came out and voted for Nikki Haley. Now, I've seen a couple of things. They've got like six people who are eligible to vote. The joke was, look, this is a trend. Look, Nikki Haley won this. She got all the votes at Dixville Notch. Dixville Notch went for Joe Biden in the 2020 election. Dixville Notch, basically, I think all the people that came out and voted for Trump in the primary, or voted for Nikki Haley in the primary at Dixville Notch, were Democrat Party crossovers, which was a big deal for Nikki Haley. Nikki Haley, something like 77% of her support was crossover votes. Now, one would say, well, isn't that what's needed to win? Okay, let's be realistic about these crossover votes. These people were not there to support Nikki Haley. They were there to oppose Donald Trump. They came over, there was kind of a movement to get people to come over and vote for Nikki Haley to stop Donald Trump, so that they knew that the Republican base was not going to vote for Nikki Haley. If they could get Nikki Haley nominated, they knew that a whole bunch of people would stay home. Rather than vote for, let's just say Biden is the nominee. He won't be, but let's say Biden is the nominee. But, folks, these definitive statements I'm making are simply my opinion, based on what I've seen. That doesn't mean it's true. don't make the mistake of gambling based on my prediction. That would be a fool's game. First of all, don't gamble. Second of all, don't gamble on my political picks. As you recall from the special election in August and the and issue one in November, I could be wrong, terribly wrong. Okay, that being said, they don't want Nikki Haley really. They would like to see her be the nominee because they know she can't win. Because they know a whole bunch of the Republican base will stay home. Why? Nikki Haley's liberal. She's a rhino. A rhino Republican in name only. Everybody knows she's a rhino. I don't know why Trump appointed her UN ambassador except to sort of throw her a bone and get her out of the way, because the UN ambassador is more or less a useless position. Unless you're somebody like Jean Kirkpatrick, if you remember her under Reagan. She didn't take any nonsense, and she made headlines, and she was a Maggie Thatcher type. And again, if you're too young to remember who Maggie Thatcher was, you need to go out and do some research on history. Maggie Thatcher was one of the toughest British MPs and one of the most successful British, prime ministers, PMs. She was an MP, but she was also a PM, prime minister. MP is member of parliament. Okay, so this crossover vote that supposedly was going to lead to victory, it's not. Those people who voted for her are going to go right back to the Democratic Party in the general. Okay, that being said, this is the big hope in a number of states. Now, in South Carolina, where Nikki is from, Donald Trump has made it clear he's way ahead of her in her home state. What does that tell you? We had a candidate here in 2020, John Kasich, and it came to the Ohio primary. Did he win? Yes, he did. What did he win with? 45% of the vote. In other words, against other candidates, he couldn't even muster 50% in his home state. That's pretty bad. That's really bad. So going back to it, Nikki will not win her home state, and Donald Trump will win that, and then he will win Nevada. There was an effort to just essentially for the Republican Party to deem Donald Trump the presumptive nominee and, you know, to stop all the, you know. And Donald Trump said, no, you may not do that. You may not make me the presumptive nominee. I want to win it fair and square through the ballot process. Well, folks, there's a lot of integrity there. Because a lot of these, if Ron DeSantis was offered to be the presumptive nominee and we drop all the pretense and you know, we'd go through the motions on primaries, he probably would have taken it. Now, I don't know that for sure. And I like Ron DeSantis. But I'm pretty sure he would have just taken that as, he would have taken that gift. And Nikki Haley certainly would. If she were so far ahead that they were going to make her the presumptive nominee, oh yeah, she'd take that in a heartbeat. That Donald Trump said no. So this thing about crossover votes, again, remember at the beginning of the show, I talked about overcoming propaganda and recognizing it. When the news media, the mainstream news media is talking about, oh, look, she's getting all these crossover votes. This isn't important, going to be important in the general election in November. No, it's not. Because those people are not trying to support Nikki Haley. They're trying to get rid of Donald Trump. And it's turning out to be a badly failed strategy. Now, the reason it won't happen in North Carolina, South Carolina, they don't allow that. They have a closed, you have to declare yourself a Republican at the ballot box during the primary and vote that ticket only. You cannot simply come in and declare like New Hampshire allowed. You can just go in and pick a ballot. You don't have to, in South Carolina, you have to be registered as a Republican. And if you change at a primary, you have to swear an oath. In a lot of states, I know Ohio, I'm pretty sure Ohio is like this. You have to swear an oath that you've been voting Democrat for at least the last 4 years. If you're a registered Democrat trying to come over and vote in the Republican primary, they make it very difficult. And for good reason. This thing that we're talking about here right now is the reason why that can't be done. By the way, I used to be an open primary guy, and I've gone over in this divisive time over the last several years, I've come over to a closed primary system to keep this kind of shenanigan from happening, to allow the parties, to allow the people who are running the assurance that they're not going to be undermined by people who are trying to use political maneuvering to undermine them in the primary election. That's why. It really is a very important consideration to make. There are reasons for an open primary, but I think they're overridden by the reasons for a closed primary. There are those of us who I'm not married to the Republican Party. If a decent Democrat was running, I would like to go over and vote for that person. Because I'm in Ohio, I'll have to wait until the general election if they are the nominee. And that has happened to me before. I've also voted third party before, which means I go in. Generally, in years when I've been, the Republicans have run such horrible candidates. I've gone in and I'd still declare Republican, but I either don't vote or I vote for who I think would be a much better candidate than probably the front runner. And I vote issues. I've done that before. I was chairman of the Ohio Constitution Party at a time, and I was still a registered Republican. Why? You couldn't register as a Constitution Party member. We were recognized for ballot access, but not as a party, per se. So I continued to vote, and did I vote in Republican primaries in those years? Oh, yes, I did. And I generally voted for whoever the opposition candidate was to the sitting, if there was a sitting or if there was a leading, and he was a skunk, I would vote for their opposition inside the party. That's the way that works. Okay. You may think that that's somehow turncoat. It's not. Why I would be for a closed primary. I am because I think people who are registered should vote in the primary of the party that they're registered as. Okay. So we know Nikki really, Nikki stays in because she's got the support of the country club Republicans. She's got people behind her sitting in gubernatorial seats who are rhinos. She's got rhino senatorial support, rhino House member support, but that's a shrinking minority right now. Everybody recognizes that the wave of the future is Donald Trump, I'm not proclaiming that he's going to be the winner in November, but what I'm saying is he's going to be the nominee, and he's the one who the Republican base will support. It won't be for these other people. It won't be for Ron DeSantis, as good a candidate as he is, despite his flaws. And again, Donald Trump is flawed as well, deeply flawed. In fact, I think he's softened a little bit on abortion, which basically makes me very uneasy. And he's always been soft on, for instance, homosexual marriage and that kind of thing. He's always been soft on that. But he is hardcore on immigration, and we're going to find out that this election is going to be a plebiscite on illegal immigration and open borders. And the rhinos in the Senate and in the House are beginning to see this. Now, they've done nothing to fix it. They've done nothing to force the president to fix it, although they're going to impeach Mayorkas, who is the head of immigration. And he should be impeached. He's an incompetent, and he's a partisan player, and he deserves to be. He won't answer direct questions in hearings, so he deserves to be impeached. All right, that's what's going on. There are deep pocket politics. I can't even go into it in an hour. I've skimmed the surface for you in this thing. Now, if you want to see a true example of what I'm talking about, if you know who Carrie Lake is, Carrie Lake is the candidate for governor who was had the election stolen from her in 2020. Well, she's running for U.S. Senate in Arizona, she was given a call by a fellow named DeWitt, who's the head of the Arizona Republican Party, and she recorded the call. Now, you can say what you will about that. In this day and age, if I had Republicans calling me and demanding that they wanted to talk to me and they had important things to say, I would probably record the call. Just be aware that Republicans, they're not going to call me. They don't care about me. I do have people in the Republican Party who I trust and who I will probably interview on the show here upcoming because there's some things we need to talk about. But, okay. She gets a call. Carrie Lake gets a call from this guy named DeWitt. What does he say? He attempts to bribe her to pull out of the... He says, I want you to go away for a couple of years, and there are people in power who want you to go away for a couple of years and not run for this Senate seat. And they were willing to give cough up boatloads of money, which she could then use for campaign coffers and that kind of thing at a later date, if she would withdraw from the race and just be quiet for a couple of years. Well, first of all, Carrie Lake's not going to be quiet. Second of all, she recorded the call and released it to the news media. And it turns out that one of the things that, that's kind of trying to be covered up by mainstream media is the fact that the question is out there, where was the money coming from? Well, the money was coming from RNSC, according to DeWitt. RNSC, the Republican National Senatorial Committee. Who is that? That's Mitch McConnell. It seems like the Republican National Senatorial Committee was willing to pay Carrie Lake a bribe to not run for the Senate. Why? Because Mitch McConnell knows he doesn't want another non-rhino in the Senate. Therefore, he's willing to cough up money that could be used to run her campaign in Arizona if she's the nominee, because Mitch McConnell is infamous for not giving money to actual true conservative candidates. He wants moderates. He wants quote-unquote moderates. He wants Democrat lights in the seat. Ladies and gentlemen, this is, you know, the Bible's very clear. Do not take a bribe to, well, let me look that up. Proverbs 17 has two passages in it. It's a kind of a long one. But it has two things about bribery. 17:8, Proverbs 17:8, a bribe is like a magic stone in the eyes of the one who gives it. Wherever he turns, he prospers. Now we go down to 17:23, and it says, the wicked accepts a bribe in secret to pervert the ways of justice. Okay, we've got the one who gives it, it's a magic stone. But the one who accepts it is there to pervert justice. That's what's going on here, folks. Nikki Haley refused it and turned him in. Now, DeWitt, to his detriment, essentially said, "Oh, this is a it's a selectively edited recording. This is the second time he's been involved in this." This kind of a thing where he's boohooed about selectively edited things. And it's absolutely false. He offered a bribe and she refused it. So who's perverting justice? It's the Arizona Republican Party and the Republican National Senate Committee. That being said, she refused it. And he has been forced to resign as the head of the Arizona Republican Party. What will that do to Carrie Lake? Well, it's becoming obvious that the election was stolen from her in 20. This will only bolster her case for her running for the Senate. And doing so to re-achieve the majority and get rid of Mitch McConnell. I don't know how the guy keeps getting reelected, but I'm looking at the people who supposedly are conservatives who continue to attempt to maintain open borders. And I can see why that's happening. Now, we've lost some people who we need to get rid of. Mitt Romney realizes he's not going to be reelected in Utah, so he has retired. There are other people who are retiring knowing full well they're going to get beat. So there are all kinds of things going on. Now, unfortunately, in California, I would love to see Steve Garvey get that. I think he's a moderate, but it's still a moderate from California. Would be much better than the Adam Schiff who's running for Senate in California, who he's running against. And Steve Garvey's basically made a fool out of him. Doesn't matter. California is a solidly Democratic state. Okay, we're about out of time. But I wanted to talk about the Supreme Court Texas decision, and I've run out of time on that, so we'll do that again next week. And I also wanted to talk about the Ohio legislature, both houses, overriding the veto of when Governor DeWine vetoed House Bill 58, which was the SAFE Act, having to do with transgender athletes and essentially forcing the state to help pay for quote-unquote gender-affirming care, which means transitioning children between sexes as much as is possible, which we talked about 2 weeks ago, can't be done. We talked about this and that it was going to be, well, it was done. That veto was overridden and the law goes into effect despite DeWine's attempt to kill it. So we'll talk about these things next week. That being said, you know what I think. I want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And please join me again next week for another Principles and Policies.